It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Maine Things Considered this evening, bills in Augusta to help Mainers not fall off what's often called the welfare cliff, and a proposal in Augusta that would give tribal courts jurisdiction over cases involving Indian women who are physically abused by non-Indian men. First, though, this news. At 5:32, I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. A public hearing is underway at City Hall in Portland to talk about plans to cut back shelter services for the homeless. In advance of the hearing, homeless advocates took to the street outside to highlight their opposition to the proposal. Tom Porter has more.
75 blankets were laid on the ground outside City Hall late Tuesday afternoon. Homeless advocates say they represent the 75 people likely to find themselves without a bed for the night under new city plans to close overflow shelter space at the Preble Street Resource Centre. Bruce Merson is with Homeless Voices for Justice.
And this would be a grave mistake to close it down, a shelter, and housing has to be done in the city.
He says the city also plans to discontinue the practice of placing homeless families in area motels once the family shelter is full, something which threatens to put another 30 or so people on the street every night. City spokesperson Jessica Grundin says the city's decision is prompted by a recent decision by the state to stop paying the overall operating costs for its shelters.
The state changed their reimbursement formula. It's forcing us to make tough decisions, which includes some cuts. And one of those cuts was to staffing for the overflow shelters.
The state also plans to stop reimbursing the city for shelter residents who are financially eligible. The public hearing was due to get underway at 5:30. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
Maine, like the nation, is facing a serious challenge with increasing numbers of seniors living longer. That's what members of the legislature's bipartisan aging caucus heard from Robin Stone, executive director of the Washington-based Leading Age Center for Applied Research.
What happens to the elderly person who way outlives his or her resources? And housing is a big piece of that. So we really need to be thinking about building new affordable senior housing, but also thinking about it as a community asset.
Stone also met with representatives of several healthcare and regional senior advocacy groups about linking services needed by seniors through existing and new housing facilities. She's encouraging increased use of technology to make sure that seniors are safe and healthy in their homes. In weather tonight, showers and thunder in the north, a few showers in the west, and clearing in the rest of the state. Low temperatures in the high 30s to high 40s north to south. And tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds in the north. Otherwise, clouds and morning showers with highs in the low 50s to mid-60s north to south. This is MPBN Radio. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Welfare reform is front and center at the State House this week as lawmakers are considering several proposals that supporters say are designed to help those that can get off welfare to reach that goal. But one measure would also prohibit the purchase of junk food with food stamp benefits. Mal Leary has more details.
Lawmakers from both major parties have introduced legislation that they say is designed to make the best use of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, commonly known as food stamps, by encouraging more healthy food. Other measures would prohibit the use of TANF, that's the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families grants, from being used to gamble, buy booze, or cigarettes. And probably the most significant of the bills up for consideration would eliminate the abrupt loss of benefits when a recipient goes back to work, even part-time. Chris Hested of Maine Equal Justice Partners says this cliff in monthly benefits unfairly penalizes people who are already struggling. For example, a typical TANF payment is $1,023 a month.
They earn $1,024, they're done with TANF. And that is a travesty when you recognize that we're throwing kids into even deeper poverty.
That cliff is very real to many recipients. Teresa Day told the legislature's Health and Human Services Committee that she received TANF while in college and says she was struggling to get her degree while supporting her daughter.
I had a job opportunity at that time to work part-time that would have helped me significantly. But if I had made just $50 more, I would have lost all of the help I was getting that I needed in order to finish college.
Governor Paul LePage has introduced legislation that would create a system that phases out benefits, but allows them to continue for a longer time as an incentive for those on welfare to go to work and stay working. He says very few of those getting welfare don't want to work.
I'm encouraged that people really want to get out there and do something. The problem is having the skill sets and knowing how to do. For instance, very simple thing. Very, very simple thing is when you're interviewing, don't chew bubblegum.
LePage says he wants to see state programs that help those on welfare get the skills they need to interview for jobs and keep a job once they've started work. His proposal would also increase transportation assistance for those transitioning from welfare to a job. Representative Drew Gatine, a Democrat from Westbrook, co-chairs the legislature's Health and Human Services Committee and has sponsored a bill with similar goals.
My understanding is that both bills require work. I think both bills have a transportation aspect to it. My bill has a child care aspect, which I think is important. But I'm really interested in looking at his bill and the department's suggestions and the suggestions of anybody else who has something to bring to the table.
LePage says his proposal also seeks to bolster the family development accounts, which allow welfare recipients to save for cars or down payments for a home without being penalized. He says he's optimistic that something can be worked out this session.
It's unusual, though, you have both parties looking at the same idea, same concept. So hopefully this can get through in some fashion.
While the committee has held hearings on some of the bills, they have yet to schedule one on LePage's legislation. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
You're listening to Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. Still to come, an injured veteran makes a tough choice. But first, representatives of Maine's tribal community and domestic violence victim advocates are supporting a proposal that would give tribal courts jurisdiction over cases involving Indian women who are physically abused by non-Indian men. Backers of the bill say it will close a loophole in Maine law by amending the state's Indian Claims Settlement Act to conform with new federal domestic violence laws. A.J. Higgins has more.
The bill before the legislature's Judiciary Committee would grant the Passamaquoddy Tribe and Penobscot Nation jurisdiction in cases involving non-natives living on tribal land and who violate a tribal ordinance. And it would make clear that Penobscot tribal courts would have concurrent jurisdiction with the state over criminal offenses in accordance with the Federal Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act. Patricia Graffam, a Passamaquoddy tribe member and a domestic violence advocate for the Penobscot Nation, says closing the legal loophole that allows non-tribal members to elude tribal courts is long overdue.
In the last year on Indian Island, 83% of the victimization on Native women was committed by non-Native men. Because these incidents were committed on a reservation, the non-Native is able to slip through a legal system with unclear jurisdictions and is not prosecuted.
Critics point to ambiguous language in the state's Indian Claims Settlement Act and to the way that state and tribal courts are structured. Donna Loring, a Penobscot Nation member and former tribal representative to the legislature, says that historically, Maine has been slow to extend the same level of recognition to its native peoples that it awards to non-natives. She said the state did not grant tribal members the right to vote in federal elections until 1954, or in state elections until 1967. Loring says the state's court system has patronized the tribes since 1842 and fails to recognize how far the nation's tribal courts have advanced.
Our court systems, if given an opportunity, could take on cases that are contributing to the overflow of cases the state now has to deal with. We have a court system that is highly respected with excellent judges and attorneys that are members of the state bar. We have come a long way since 1842.
Sherry Mitchell, a member of the Penobscot Nation and an attorney, recalls that when she was growing up on Indian Island near Old Town, her parents were constantly on the lookout for men driving onto the reservation in search of Native girls. She says some members of the nation felt the need to take the law into their own hands in order to protect their own.
I was not allowed to walk outside after dark in our community because there were carloads of young men from the university that would come and try to grab young women that they found on the street. because nothing was being done about that, there were two young men from our community who just took it upon themselves to stand at the bridge. We had the one-lane green bridge at that time and stop every vehicle that came into the community.
Mitchell says approval of the bill would provide more protection to tribal women and restore confidence among tribal members in the state's court system. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
And finally today, Christy Gardner has a habit of pushing limits. In high school in Auburn, she played two sports per season. In the military, she chose police work over her nursing because she wanted to be in the action. And when a spinal cord injury during her service damaged her lower legs in 2006, Gardner wore out 8 pairs of braces in her efforts to stay out of a wheelchair. But Gardner's legs are a constant source of pain and problems, so now she's pushing the limits even further. Gardner's electing to have her lower legs amputated. Patty White has the story.
Most days, Christy Gardner keeps active, volunteering at dog breeder Varney's Labs in Turner.
Puppies! Come on, guys! Puppies! Come here! Look what I got!
Gardner feeds the dogs, changes their water, and sweeps the kennel. She manages the rosters and shot records.
I love it because I really spend half the day playing with puppies and half the day getting workout.
Gardner wishes she could lug the 50-pound bags of food or move the kennel fencing, but she can't feel or move her ankles. Braces keep them locked at 90 degrees, and that allows her to walk. But the braces take a toll on her legs.
I wake up in the morning and they're swollen, misshapen, welts, bruises, blisters from the day before. Eventually, once I cram them into my braces, the swelling starts to go down. They'll fit a little better. I'll keep having to tighten the straps during the day, the more I walk and move and all that. And then by the afternoon, they start to swell up again from beating on them all day.
In 2006, Gardner was injured in a line-of-duty incident while assigned as a military police officer. The circumstances of her injury are confidential, but the effects are not.
I suffered 2 skull fractures, one to the front and one to the side of my skull. And somewhere in the medevac process, they injured my spinal cord.
Gardner's brain damage caused memory loss. She had to learn to speak and write again. Bookcases filled with photo albums help her remember people from her past.
I would say that was probably the worst part or the most frustrating part.
She developed seizures and had to wear a helmet for 6 years to protect herself from falls. When she got the initial prognosis for her future from doctors, it was bleak.
They went through like a 3-page list of things they said I'd probably never do again. I wasn't supposed to be able to swim, bike, live alone. It said no bathing alone. There was just so many things that the average people take for granted that they said I'd never do. I'd never drive again.
Doctors told Gardner she was 100% disabled and severely handicapped.
You know, obviously after a while of absorbing it, it was like, no, I'm going to prove them wrong. There's still stuff I can do, and I'm going to do everything I can each day.
Gardner spent 5 years in rehabilitation. She got a dog, Moxie, who's trained in seizure alert and response. And ultimately, Gardner was able to move into her own house in Lewiston. She joined 3 different sled hockey teams, including a national veterans team.
We have this running joke that on the entire roster there are 6 legs, and I have 2 of them.
In 2012, Gardner was named the National Disabled Hockey Athlete of the Year. But it was while playing sled hockey, she noticed something.
All of these guys are amputees and can do so much more than I can. Some of them play lacrosse. Some of them play stand-up hockey on their prosthetics. Like, there's just so much that they're able to achieve. And when I see them doing stairs or hills or walking around like it's no big deal, I want to be able to do that. You know, if they can do it, why can't I get that quality of life too?
The braces Gardner uses are painful, and the numbness in her ankles is potentially dangerous. Last summer, a bee sting on her ankle landed her in the hospital because she couldn't feel it and only noticed a problem when she had an allergic reaction.
Why do I have to risk stupid stuff like that just to keep my feet that don't work?
The solution, Gardner decided, was elective amputation, and she got initial support from Veterans Affairs. But when she tried to schedule the amputation with a surgeon at Walter Reed...
He said, you know, I changed my mind. I can't in good conscience take a girl's legs. You're too pretty to lose your legs. So I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, what kind of reason is that I shouldn't be able to run? Like, he told me I would be able to run about 6 months after surgery. And now you're telling me. He said, be thankful you're not a quad and stick with the wheelchair.
She says she sought the same help at the Togas VA facility in Maine, but with a similar result. Gardner says hospital administrators rejected the surgery because it wasn't medically necessary.
So many of them look at it as a failure to save my legs rather than a success at preserving my quality of life.
As Gardner's quest for elective amputation got media attention, she ultimately connected with a surgeon in California who agreed to amputate her legs below the knees. She'll do one leg at a time, and the first amputation is Wednesday. Between surgery, travel, and expenses, it's going to cost her $14,000 per leg. Gardner says she's nervous. There are no guarantees on the outcome of her surgery. But she says not seeking the amputations would feel like giving up. She wants to run again, she says, and claim the life that she wants to live. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
And at 13 minutes before 6, it's time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
A cool front will bulldoze showers and isolated thunderstorms ahead of it and will press into New Brunswick this evening. Showers linger across the county overnight while clouds peel away south of the mountains by dawn, upper 30s far north to near 50 in Kittery. A very windy Wednesday on the docket. Any showers over the mountains in the northern half of the state exit stage right during the morning. Look for a blend of sun and clouds throughout much of Maine. Cheeriest Portland west and south. Low 50s north, mid-60s south. A terrific Thursday for us all. Nearly unlimited sun, 59 to 68 north to south. Bright sunshine will hold Friday across northern and eastern counties while fading in the afternoon over western and southern sections. Middle to upper 60s, cooling afternoon sea breezes. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Ed Morin, Tom Porter, Keith Shortall, and Barbara Caridi. I'm Nora Flaherty.